Did a soft landing immigrate to the United States? Here's what matters. Live from New York City, I'm Lauren Goodwin, and this is Market Matters from New York Life Investments. In this podcast, we bring you the best insights from across the New York Life Investments platform because we believe that by sharing perspectives and engaging with you, our listeners, we can all become better investors. Welcome, everyone. It's the week of April 1st, 2024, and we considered doing an April Fool's episode, but this world of ours is already so wild, it would be hard to tell the joke from reality. We do, however, have a unique subject for today's discussion and a serious one, immigration. What is normally a politically loaded topic, at least here in the US, has in recent weeks been the talk of economists and policy wonks galore. Practitioners are discussing if new data showing a surge in immigration to the US in the past few years has been a form of economic support that was previously less recognized or even unbeknownst to investors.
Like Lauren said, this is new data from the Congressional Budget Office, or CBO, and discussed further by the Brookings Institute, both of which are nonpartisan, by the way. This is new data which showed that post-pandemic, namely in 2022 and 2023, immigration into the U.S. jumped by about 2 million people per year. And we'll level with you, the vast majority of this influx was undocumented immigration. But we've also seen upticks in legal immigration and in student visas and temporary workers.
So let's talk about why this data is being considered by some economists to be the missing explanatory piece of this economic cycle.
So simply put, we've seen a historically strong labor market, meaning big job creation, low unemployment, very high wage growth. But now that we have this data that over 3 million people came into the U.S. labor force in 2023 alone, and economists are realizing that the labor market might have been even tighter if not for this immigration.
In other words, higher immigration may have relieved some of the wage-related inflationary pressures on the economy. Greater labor supply means softer wage growth.
The report also indicates that driven by immigration trends, GDP is expected to see an additional $7 trillion in growth over the next decade.
That's the cyclical story. But understanding how immigration feeds through into economic views is a little bigger than this. One of the simplest economic growth functions that we study as economists has four components: the supply of labor, how many workers there are, the productivity of labor, how much those workers can create, the capital base, which is equipment and supplies and the things that those workers need to make whatever it is that they're making, and how productive that capital is. So call it tech or innovation.
From there, it's probably pretty easy to see that, sure, higher immigration means a larger labor pool, which, according to that function, helps economic growth.
But the stakes are higher than that because the U.S. and other developed nations have a demographics problem. In other words, a structural labor supply problem. The U.S. birth rate, just like that in Europe and in Japan, is just below the replacement rate of around 2 children per woman, meaning as a pool, we have an older country depending on the productivity of a smaller and smaller labor force over time. But there are a few types of solutions to this issue.
So to address that demographics issue, one of the first ways a country can address this is by providing incentives to bring that birth rate up. This would usually include things like child-based tax breaks or childcare subsidies. But as a fun little example, the Financial Times recently reported on a Korean firm offering $75,000 to their employees for each baby they have. It's a bit unorthodox, but it's most likely in response to South Korea having the lowest birth rate in the world of far less than one child per mother.
Second way to address labor scarcity is to rely on the productivity piece instead. if a small group of labor is way more productive, then growth and the income that those workers are receiving doesn't necessarily have to be affected. And this is one of the huge areas of research and debate around generative AI, not least because that wage piece that I mentioned doesn't always come through. Much more productive workers don't necessarily make much, much, much more money over time.
Finally, the labor scarcity issue can potentially be addressed with increased immigration, so essentially importing labor. To put some numbers behind how this has manifested in the past few years, the CBO projects that for 2024, U.S. population growth would be about 0.2%. But when we add in increased immigration, population growth should be above 1% for 2024.
And it's worth mentioning that the CBO is the Congressional Budget Office in the U.S. and the source of this new immigration data that Julia and I have been speaking about. Now, the numbers that Julia gave, that's more than a five-fold increase in population growth, which translates into steep labor force growth when we account for the fact that immigrants to the U.S., including those that are undocumented, tend to be of working age or even younger and have high participation rates in the labor force, even if it's an unofficial participation in the labor force.
So beyond government-provided estimates of the labor pool here, we do want to caution that conjecture about the impact of this immigration influx on things like inflation, unemployment figures, etc. It does have its limits. It's not totally clear how the impact of undocumented workers, for instance, is fully integrated into the formal employment figures, wage figures, even household and business surveys. So we're not jumping on the sort of bandwagon that's sort of forming that immigration is the critical missing piece of figuring out what's happening in this economic cycle.
Instead, we're using it as a new piece of our framework to help us understand where we are in this economic cycle and where we might be going next. That brings us to our portfolio pause, a segment of the program where we share an investment idea. Immigration doesn't offer investors a quick tactical opportunity to trade on, but it's the impact on the labor market that complicates two things. First, the stakes of the 2024 election, and second, how investors interpret data for making decisions about interest rates.
First, on the election. Immigration was already a critical issue, and the implications of this new data make it more so, in our view. A second Biden term would likely be focused on border security, in line with the bipartisan Border Security Act that had passed the House. A second Trump term would likely also focus on border security, but also include a significant amount of deportations. We've underlined today how higher immigration has likely helped growth stay solid without fostering inflation. And we believe that reversals of these trends could be inflationary. That said, almost none of the proposals we're seeing from either candidate are disinflationary.
Second, let's make the connection between immigration and interest rates. In this economic cycle, in the near term, our base case is still that the Federal Reserve cuts interest rates in June for the first time, thanks in part to their trust that factors like immigration can help inflation to move lower, even if growth remains solid. It's the idea that because more people have been joining the labor force, they don't have to worry quite so much that wage growth might go out of control. But in this context, inflation still is the critical metric to watch for understanding interest rate risk. Now, in the much longer term, the factors that Julie and I were discussing earlier around labor supply do and can bias inflation and interest rates lower. But as Julia mentioned, it remains to be seen that these trends can persist. Coming up next, March jobs data comes out this week, and we are looking to see if new payrolls hold up, especially in the sectors outside of healthcare, education, and government jobs that have been so strong. But that's it for today. We'll be back next week for more Market Matters. In the meantime, please remember to give us a like, follow, or review wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you have a question or topic of interest, reach out to us on LinkedIn. You can also follow our views at newyorklifeinvestments.com/global-markets. Until then, I'm Lauren Goodwin here with Julia Herman. We will see you next time. All investments are subject to market risk and will fluctuate in value. Diversification cannot assure a profit or protect against loss in a declining market. The opinions expressed are those of the Global Market Strategy Team of New York Life Investment Management, LLC, and not necessarily those of other investment boutiques affiliated with New York Life Investments. This information should not be relied upon by the reader as research or investment advice regarding any strategy, and there's no guarantee that any strategies discussed will be effective. New York Life Investments is both the service mark and the common trade name of certain investment advisors affiliated with the New York Life Insurance Company, New York, New York, 10010.